I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva, practicing physician and associate vice president of Vizient. On our previous two episodes, we featured excerpts from a recent webinar I hosted, which dealt with COVID long haulers. Those are patients who continue to suffer side effects from COVID long after their infection. On this episode, we continue our discussion with Dr. Rex McCallum, Dr. Justin Seashore, who began a clinic for COVID long haulers at the University of Texas Medical Branch. Also joining us is Dr. Manny McDowell from SG2.
So, Justin, what's the future direction? What do you see is the direction or the trajectory of these clinics?
I do see them persisting for some time and continuing to grow. Also, the research component, as we understand more of what's happening with these patients and more research, and as we look at more data, I think these clinics are a great place to funnel some of where that research is being done. So there's not as much the patients being overwhelmed with multiple studies, and it can help with providers that manage these patients who understand a little more what the processes they're going through can help direct what research is being done.
I think all those things that Justin talked about make really good sense. I think we're also in the process of looking into whether we need to further expand our capacity to see these patients in our clinics. And indeed, we have had some expansion of services and capacity in the time that we've been running the clinic.
We continue to grow, and we've brought in more and more providers. During times when we've had significant surges, I've had colleagues from internal medicine that are passionate about this as well offer to give me some clinic time. It's just important is to having a team of people that are passionate about this, because there's so much to learn and there's so much new data coming out all the time. And you really have to be on top of that, because your patients are. They are reading everything they can. They're in the chat rooms. I check the news every morning before I go to clinic to know what questions my patients may have. It's an important aspect, and they expect us to know it. And so part of getting them to buy in to what we're doing is that you know the same, at least know what they know. It's just as important.
I totally get that.
Another thing, Tom, that I want to mention is that we don't believe that these post-COVID clinics are for everybody, for the reasons that we just mentioned. And so for many providers or community hospitals or primary care practices, it's about connecting your patients to these clinics and partnering perhaps with an institution that is able to do this, able to do the research, able to provide the access to the subspecialists, and is actively involved in understanding day-to-day the changes that are going on in terms of new research findings for post-COVID.
Actually, it segues perfectly into the next section I wanted to go into. So, Rex and Justin, if I was an organization and I wanted to establish a long haulers clinic, what would you tell me to think about first before getting started?
I would first think about making it multidisciplinary, getting the team together, and hopefully identifying people in your organization who are passionate about it, like Justin's already said, and are willing to keep up with the latest information, both of which are very important. I think that there is demand for the services. I would not spend necessarily a lot of time doing a business analysis of things. I think that it'll be more like, if you build it, they will come. Justin, what would you add?
I completely agree with that. It is an interdisciplinary clinic. And so having those teams on board right from the beginning, you need to make sure your rehabilitation services can handle the volume. That's another very important thing, as we had to grow our pulmonary rehab just to address the patient volume we were sending. Your physical therapy as well. Make sure you have a strong setup for your social workers and your psychologists, because that's also an important part of the management. So making sure you have that infrastructure, because like he said, the patients will come, and it's just making sure you have the resources available to them.
Manny, from a thought leader's perspective in SG2, any thoughts?
I just think in the wake of the pandemic, we're going to see some long-term challenges with chronic disease management that have been exacerbated by COVID. And challenges with chronic disease management have always been there. It's a hard area to tackle and address, especially when we're also recognizing the inequities in healthcare. And so it will be very important for all organizations, all hospitals, to recognize that this will not be going away with the vaccinations, that we're going to continue to see the chronic diseases from COVID and the exacerbations of existing chronic diseases. And being able to address this is going to be really important in the next 1 to 3 years.
Yeah, I could certainly see that. In reference to the hypertension and the diabetes, were these patients at target? And did you notice any changes among those patients that weren't in target in reference to their symptoms?
So I know with some of the patients, a lot of complaints for patients with hypertension that was previously controlled, a lot of complaints that is now uncontrolled. So some adjustments have been made to their medications. I've been touching base with the cardiologists that work with us with the clinic. And so it's too soon to say statistically if that's true. So that we're still following that one. And then from the diabetes standpoint, it's a similar mix where some were controlled before, some were not, but it's still too early to tell if this is a new chronic change for those patients.
So do you actually see or do you foresee a time when most of these long COVID clinics are actually recovered? I know Maddie said between the 2 or 3 years, but do you actually see improvement occurring?
Within my patient population, there are those 74 that have been discharged from the clinic that have improved. And some of those patients were significantly ill that come in that have some significant improvement, that they're back to work, back at their jobs. They're not on oxygen anymore. They're not on any medications that were prescribed from the clinic. We get them off of those. Some may have an inhaler. The question is there a placebo effect more than anything? And so I try to have set goals. Any medication that starts in the clinic, we have a set goal to get them off it.
Did you have any experience in multidisciplinary integrated care? Meaning, did you have this already operational proficiency to do this from the start?
No, I developed it for this clinic itself. I did model it after what we know from post-ICU clinics that have been established around the country. That was a launching point for how this clinic would be started. There's a model there for patients that had been hospitalized. And because we thought many of those patients were going to be similar population, that's where I started it.
Rex, any comment in reference to setting this up as an integrated model? I mean, your care management is going to be, have to be spot on to make this work. So I was wondering if there's any other additional stakeholders you needed to keep in mind?
No, I think Justin's done a good job of accumulating the right kind of people to do the work. And he had a lot of support from within the organization all the way up to the highest executive leadership once this need was recognized. So what we haven't really talked much about is once we decided to do this, we set this clinic up in about 2 weeks. Is that about right, Justin?
Yes, it is. The leadership here was very supportive. They just asked what it is we needed. And a lot of the staff, they were excited. They wanted to help. There was a lot of people out there that want to help. A lot of our referrals came from staff as well, who have family members that were sick and knew what was going on. So there's a lot of people that wanted to help. And that's really what got this moving forward.
Telemedicine. Are you able to do any of your visits through telemedicine?
So yeah, when we started the clinic, we did all our initial screenings via telemedicine. One thing we ran into was a lot of the patients did not like it because they were struggling with no provider would see them. For many patients would come in, you're the first doctor that would see me in person. Because there's so much concern initially with COVID. And we had our set 2 week mark. We'd been studying all the evidence, knowing with viral loads, what the risk of contagion. So we were following the evidence and patients were really appreciative actually being able to come in. We'll do some follow-ups as telemedicine for some of our patients that have come from much farther away. But there is quite an appreciation for the in-person visit from the patient population.
Yeah, and we've done 87 of those visits, Maddie, to answer your question, telemedicine visits. And remember, during the pandemic, we used the same code, so you can't make the distinction based on the codes.
And you also mentioned that some were coming from far away. How far were these patients coming from?
Some of them, they were living in Oklahoma, who drove down here. We had calls from California, from all over the state, Louisiana. We had from Florida, just people looking because they want help.
So. I think that just underscores the need and the demand for answers and services.
That's actually very impressive. Question is, are you seeing a lot different post-COVID issues in your clinic other than the expected ones? For example, joint pain, skin irritation, et cetera. And there seems to be a lot of people who complain of many different symptoms post-COVID, and that actually makes it quite challenging to treat.
There is a variety of symptoms patients have, and there's a varied how they present to them. That's part of the reason we focus on symptoms that are debilitating and stopping them in their life. So such as the shortness of breath, there is joint pain that a lot of people do complain about. Some of them are complaining of old joint pain that's more worsened. Skin irritation, we have them seen by dermatology to help us follow up with that. It's not as significant of a complaint as I was expecting because you would see a lot of talking about COVID toes in the initial presentations. So it's not every patient. And that's part of why these clinics need to exist is because you have to stay on top of the many different symptoms that they can complain of. And we follow up many of those areas, but a lot of them have a lot of assistance with rehabilitation. So I try to focus on a lot of the non-medication ways to treat them.
The question is, are you using olfactory rehabilitation and is that helping?
So We've brought that on board for them. It's too early for me to say if it's doing.
What about the vaccination itself? There's been discussion about the vaccine helping some of the symptoms patients experience with long COVID. What have you found?
So it's definitely one of the taglines I use to get my patients to get the vaccine in the post-COVID clinic for sure. Because even within that population, there is a hesitancy for the vaccine. Their concern is that they don't want to feel that way again. And they're worried it will cause their symptoms to come back. And there's that PTSD component of what they were going through. And so they're very afraid of having any side effects from the vaccine. And so I will use some of that data. Yes, some have had significant improvement. Some feel their symptoms worsened. Mm. So it's hard to say. I'm keeping track of all my patients that have been vaccinated. I keep track of which vaccine they've received. But right now, it's too early to make anything of that data.
What do you plan to do once COVID kind of passes?
Of course. As COVID passes, and for some reason, we're lucky and these clinics are not needed.
I hope so.
I developed this clinic and the idea of a post-ICU clinic initially. And my goal always was, as COVID went, this could be transitioned to post-ICU care, which is also something we've needed for patients for so long.
Yeah, and this is Rex. I'm not sure that COVID is going to totally go away anyway. I think the numbers are going to go way down, but it's not going to totally go away, which means there will still be some of these patients around.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Rex, do you think that you'll take these clinics to scale and expand them more into the UTMB program?
Well, we have expanded, Tom, some already, and I anticipate that we will expand further if the demand remains high.
Justin, you see this expanding into your primary care practices eventually?
I think there's going to be an importance like keeping this separate to some degree because there's so many different aspects for the patients. We work closely with the primary care providers and update them. And these patients still will follow with their primary care provider, but we help as an integrated area of their care.
Yeah, and this is Rex. I would say that as we learn more and more and we develop some treatments that are effective, then I would anticipate eventually this will move more and more into a primary care kind of setting. But I think that's months to years in the future, in all honesty.
That's the end of this episode of Modern Practice. My appreciation goes to Maddie, Rex, and Justin for their lively discussion about COVID long haulers and their glimpse at the future of COVID care. And to our listeners, please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. And also, please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast on the latest in healthcare strategies. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.